Welcome back to the deep dive. You've brought us the sources, and we are giving you the accelerated shortcut to being completely informed.
Glad to be back.
Today, we are strapping in for a high-altitude look at one of the most foundational, yet I think misunderstood, skilled trades in the modern industrial world.
Absolutely.
We're talking about the mastery required of a crane operator.
This is a deep dive into some serious mechanical and cognitive precision. I mean, the sources you shared, they really reveal that this role is so much more than just driving a big piece of machinery.
Right.
We are looking at a controlled, high-stakes operation that basically dictates site productivity, project schedules, and of course, safety across, well, everything: infrastructure, energy, commercial construction.
Absolutely. So our mission today is to extract the facts about the complex competencies, those demanding certifications, and the relentless safety expectations placed on these professionals. If you need to understand what it takes to orchestrate massive controlled lifts, this is your shortcut.
And when we talk about complexity, it's about the sheer number of simultaneous variables they manage.
Okay.
The sources outline that an operator isn't just moving a load. They are managing hoists, booms, jibs.
Which are the flexible extension arms, right?
Exactly. The extension
Yeah.
arms plus the wire rope systems, outriggers, stabilization mechanisms. It's all happening at once.
Okay, wow.
And all while they are tracking load weight, the exact lift radius, and swing potential.
So it's a real-time calculation of physics and geometry.
It is. They have to align every single micro movement with an established lift plan, often with only seconds to react if a condition changes.
The scale of the equipment is just enormous, but it sounds like the liability for coordination and safety is what truly defines the role.
That's it. Project deadlines, insurance liability, strict compliance mandates. They all place these professional expectations far, far beyond just basic handling of the controls.
That responsibility is immense.
It is. And it's why understanding that coordination imperative is probably our first critical takeaway. The operator is the central point, but, and this is key, they never work in isolation.
Okay, so let's unpack that central role. If the operator is the brain, who are the eyes and the hands?
They absolutely rely on the ground crew. What's fascinating here is the constant critical interpretation of signals and, verbal directions coming from the riggers and signal persons.
Who could be thousands of feet away or dozens of stories below them?
Precisely. So the operator must maintain continuous visual and auditory awareness of personnel, of structures, of every single element in the load's path.
That requires just incredible discipline. They're multitasking complex machine control while actively listening and looking for potential hazards.
Correct. And that discipline, it really manifests in the ability to stop the lift immediately if conditions shift. They have to reassess the environment. Maybe a crew member stepped into the swing zone or the wind just picked up unexpectedly, and they can only proceed when safety is 100% reestablished. That capacity for self-regulation under pressure is foundational.
That real-time decision-making is clearly paramount.
Yeah.
Now, the sources emphasize that the demands aren't uniform because the equipment isn't uniform.
Not at all.
The training has to be specialized based on the type of crane.
Let's look at the four main categories they define.
Yeah, and these classifications require highly specialized familiarity with the specific mechanical dynamics and control systems for that machine. Ignoring those differences is often where incidents begin.
Let's start with the most flexible and widely used: mobile cranes. We see these everywhere.
We do. Mobile cranes are defined by that flexibility, that rapid deployment, but that ease of movement comes with some very serious setup requirements. The operator must be an expert in calculating and executing the setup.
What does that involve? Understanding boom configuration, counterweight setups, load chart limits, which specify exactly how much they can lift at a given radius, and, crucially, ground bearing requirements.
Wait, let's pause on that. Ground bearing requirements. Why is that such a critical piece of the puzzle?
Because the ground is often the weakest link, even if the crane itself is mechanically perfect.
Ah.
The operator is responsible for calculating how much pressure those outriggers, those massive stabilizing legs, are putting on the soil. If the weight isn't distributed perfectly across stable pads, the ground underneath can fail.
And that leads to a tip over.
An immediate one, catastrophic tipping. Even if the lift was technically well within the crane's mechanical limits, it's all about risk assessment before the lift even begins.
That puts the setup in a completely new light.
Okay.
Moving up in altitude, we have the icons of city skylines, tower cranes.
And here the challenge shifts dramatically. Tower cranes are fixed placement, vertical lifting machines for high-rise projects.
So visibility is the big problem.
It's a huge problem. Operators manage extremely long radius operations, and their view from a cab, hundreds of feet in the air, is often limited to just the drop zone. They rely intensely on radio communication and need this. Almost three-dimensional situational awareness to manage loads moving above evolving structures and active crews below.
So it's visibility and communication compounded by isolation.
Precisely. Next, we look inward to the industrial workhorses, overhead and bridge cranes.
These are the ones inside factories, warehouses?
Right. They operate on fixed rails, meaning precision is required in very confined spaces. Unlike outdoor cranes, the operators navigating around expensive production lines, inventory, and personnel moving on foot.
A completely different set of hazards.
Totally different. And finally, those operating in the harshest environments. Rough terrain and crawler cranes. These are the workhorses of energy projects and massive infrastructure. They support heavy lifting on uneven, undeveloped surfaces. Muddy fields, slopes, rocky ground.
Mm-hmm.
The operator must rigorously assess site stability, the influence of that slope on load dynamics, and ground compaction before they even stage the crane.
Because a failure there could shut down a multi-million dollar site.
Exactly.
So we've covered the machine and the varied environments. Now here's where it gets really interesting for me. Shifting focus from the hardware to the human.
To the person in the cab.
Exactly. What combination of technical skill and disciplined decision-making truly defines a qualified operator? Our sources detail the five core skills of mastery.
Yeah, in this list, it goes way beyond just basic controls. It represents the core competency and reliability that employers require. It directly influences job site coordination and, critically, risk exposure.
Okay, skill number one, mechanical and equipment knowledge.
This is non-negotiable. The operator has to understand crane dynamics, load charts, boom angles, wire rope behavior, all of it. This mechanical awareness is what lets them detect early signs of system strain.
Like what?
Like a vibrating hydraulic line or a subtle shift in the winch speed before they escalate into a catastrophic failure. They aren't just reacting. They're diagnosing the machine's health in real time.
Skill number two. Precision control and hand-eye coordination.
This is the finesse. Guiding these heavy loads, which might have high wind resistance, through tight structural openings requires steady, controlled inputs.
It's not just yanking levers.
Not at all. The operator maintains consistent control while actively compensating for wind, ground vibration, inherent load swing. This is the difference between placing a turbine component with 6 inches of clearance and missing the target completely.
Okay, skill number three. Situational awareness. This is about continuous scanning, right?
It's more than scanning, it's anticipation. Skilled operators are continuously looking for hazards. But the key difference is they anticipate how the load will behave 2 seconds before they execute the movement.
So they're always thinking ahead.
Always. They know precisely when a lift must be paused to maintain safety. It's about knowing the environment, not just the machine.
That leads naturally to skill number four, communication readiness.
Absolutely essential. Clear, rapid interpretation of instructions from ground crews is vital for accuracy, all while you're maintaining full control of the equipment. We often see that workforce continuity strengthens this.
You mean crews that work together longer get better at it?
Yeah, they develop a kind of shorthand, a predictable coordination that just enhances safety.
And the final core skill, which arguably requires the most intense judgment, problem solving during live lifts. How is this different from situational awareness?
Situational awareness is predicting risk. Problem solving is immediate reaction to an unpredicted factor.
Got it.
Maybe a sudden wind gust, a shifting load balance that wasn't anticipated, or unexpected ground instability near a tire. This requires immediate high-pressure reasoning.
So their judgment in that moment is the only thing preventing a disaster.
In those moments, it's the only barrier against a massive incident.
It's clear they don't just react, they proactively plan. That brings us to the formal safety layer and risk management.
That's the pre-lift assessment, and it is profoundly complex. Before moving any critical load, the operator has to verify ground stability, reconfirm the load weight, confirm rigging integrity, ensure counterweights are perfect, all against the written lift plan.
Can you give us a concrete example of that complexity? It sounds like more than just checking boxes.
Okay, think about wind. An operator can check a weather app for wind speed at ground level, right?
Sure. Good.
But the lift plan requires knowing the wind gradient, the speed difference between the ground and the tip of the boom 300 feet up.
Wow, I never thought of that.
If they're lifting something with a large surface area, that difference in wind speed translates directly into uncontrollable swing. So a complex assessment means measuring that wind shear and knowing the precise risk threshold for that specific load.
That detail is incredible. So given this high-stakes environment, let's look at the pathway to becoming an operator. The rigor of training and certification must be intense.
It absolutely is. Operators advance through structured formal training, supervised practice hours, and then they face these formal certification assessments.
And that training covers what, the basics?
It covers equipment operation, load physics, hazard ID, and critically formalized emergency procedures.
And the credentials are non-negotiable for any serious work.
For sure. Most professional roles require passing nationally recognized written exams, testing their knowledge of load charts and safety standards, and practical exams, which validate their ability to control the equipment under simulated stress.
And that certification acts as a compliance layer for employers and insurers.
Exactly.
But the learning doesn't stop there, right? Especially as technology changes the machines.
That's where ongoing competency development becomes so necessary.
Mm.
Cranes are evolving fast. They now have digital load indicators, sophisticated telematics, automated assist controls. Operators had to take refresher courses to stay familiar with all the new tools and safety protocols.
Speaking of challenges, we talked about wind, but what are the biggest external factors constantly working against the operator?
Environmental variables are a massive daily factor. Wind, of course, but also temperature. Extreme heat impacts hydraulic fluid viscosity and system performance. Rain, snow, and ice dramatically alter ground conditions and critically impair visibility.
So operators have to know when to say no.
They have to recognize these environmental risk thresholds and maintain disciplined decision-making, even when project schedules create intense pressure.
Which means they are also effectively the chief mechanic for their own shift.
They're the first line of defense. The rigor of equipment inspections is non-negotiable at the start of every single shift.
What are they checking?
Everything. Structural components, wire ropes for fraying or kinking, sheaves, hydraulic lines, hooks, safety latches. Recognizing and reporting early equipment concerns is vital for avoiding catastrophic incidents.
Now, switching to the industry demand. We know the labor market for qualified operators has tightened. If a certification is the entry point, what are employers looking for beyond that piece of paper?
Certification gets you the interview, but employers are evaluating candidates on proven reliability and diverse capability. They're looking at the depth of practical experience and equipment hours, preferably across multiple crane types. And critically, they rigorously examine the safety record and incident history.
And near misses too, I imagine.
Increasingly, yes. They want to see near miss documentation. How did the operator react when a situation went south but didn't become an incident?
So performance is paramount, and it sounds like technology is rapidly changing the job description, requiring new proficiencies.
Indeed. The human element is merging with the digital. Operators now need deep proficiency with load indicators and digital sensors, which give them real-time data on structural stress.
And you mentioned telematics. What exactly is that tracking in a crane?
For the employer, telematics tracks usage, operational patterns, and maybe most critically, performance outside the established safety envelope.
So did the operator push the machine to its limits, or did they operate conservatively?
Exactly. It moves the assessment from paper logs to real-time, measurable performance data. It adds a whole new layer of accountability.
And the most visually dramatic shift is the emergence of remote operation and assist controls.
This is truly transforming the field. Remote operation lets the operator stand outside the cab for specific lifts, which dramatically improves visibility in congested areas.
Which would solve that whole tower crane problem we talked about earlier.
It directly addresses it. And automated assist controls use sensors to help stabilize loads and prevent critical mechanical overloads. The operator has to adapt, trusting the data while still maintaining that core mechanical and situational awareness.
What a dense, high-consequence career. To summarize the core insight here, crane operation is a highly specialized field where mechanical awareness, disciplined communication, and situational judgment all converge to manage complex risks in environments where the smallest error can have massive, multi-million dollar consequences.
And that demand for high caliber skill is only increasing, whether we're talking about massive public works projects, the growth of renewable energy,
installing those gigantic wind turbines.
Exactly. Or manufacturing, large-scale commercial construction. These sectors consistently require operators who can ensure workforce stability and uphold a rigorous safety culture. It's a foundational role in building the modern world.
It's a profound responsibility, and our source material clearly defines situational awareness and problem solving during live lifts as essential non-technical human competencies that remain critical even with all this new tech.
And that raises the final important question for you to mull over after this deep dive. Given the rise of remote operation and automated assist controls, and this intense continuing reliance on consistent human judgment to handle unforeseen factors, what does this imply for the ultimate limits of automation in high-risk, real-time industrial work?
Will a human always need to be the critical problem solver, even if they are no longer physically in the cab? A great thought to end on.